purview. Well,
I would not hesitate. I would not hesitate to guess as to what the commission will say, because it's been there's just too much paperwork involved. There are too many parties involved.
This is Grand Finale, co-host of the Drive Time Radio Show, and you are listening to WGXC Agra, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need, and it's either a Macintosh 2011 or newer 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info at WGXC.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés. If you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street. You belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Sarah Tafton reports for Columbia Greene Media that after the Greene County Sheriff hired his own son last year in violation of a county nepotism policy, legislators voted February 19th for virtually the same policy that they say may be illegal or unenforceable. The story is loaded with contradictions. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said he was working on language changes for the nepotism policy with the State Civil Service Office. But the Department of Civil Service said it has not been contacted by Greene County officials on the issue. Groden said last year that if he qualified through the civil service test, Matthew Seeley could not be hired until December after his father, Sheriff Greg Seeley, retired. Then 5 weeks later, Groden said Seeley had been hired. Now the nepotism policy reads, and I quote, Greene County will avoid the practice or appearance of favoritism in hiring and the assignment of employees. Therefore, an employee's immediate relative will not be hired or assigned to a position under the direct supervision of the current employee, end quote. The only change is the phrase, and I quote, under the direct supervision, end quote, which used to read, and I quote, within the chain of command, end quote. In the story, county officials and legislators speak no ill of relatives hiring each other with taxpayer money. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Kayla Harris and Steve Hughes report for the Times Union that the State Working Families Party this weekend endorsed attorney Matthew Toprowski over incumbent district attorney and Democrat David Soares and Albany County legislator Samuel Fine over assembly member Democrat John McDonald in the 108th Assembly District. The Working Families Party helped Soares get elected in the 2004 Democratic primary over then-incumbent Paul Klein, and this is the first time Soares has not received their endorsement. Toprowski was an assistant district attorney in Soares' office. Toprowski said in a statement, and I quote, "I vow to end the failed policies of over-prosecute and over-punish that have fueled mass incarceration and led to a 50% higher incarceration rate than the state's average in Albany," end quote. Fine is in his second term as an Albany County legislator and will take on McDonald, he says, because of the four-term incumbent's criticism last year of tenant reform laws and mixed feelings on a $15 minimum wage in upstate New York. The Working Families Party has never endorsed McDonald. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Emilia Teasdale reports in the Columbia paper that local stores are preparing customers for the statewide plastic bag ban that goes into effect March 1st. New York is banning any plastic bag that is provided to a customer by, and I quote, "a person required to collect tax to be used by the customer to carry tangible personal property," end quote. There are exceptions. Bags for uncooked meat, fish, or poultry. To package bulk items such as fruits, vegetables, grains, or candy to contain food sliced or prepared, and for a newspaper for delivery to a subscriber are allowed. And bags sold in bulk to a customer at the point of sale, trash bags, food storage bags, garment bags, bags prepackaged for sale to a customer, plastic carryout bags provided by a restaurant, tavern, or similar food service establishment to carry out or deliver food, and bags provided by a pharmacy to carry prescription drugs are also allowed. Stores are required to collect plastic bags and bread bags and plastic wraps that come over cases of water and paper towels. Hannaford and many other stores will charge a nickel fee for paper bags and are also selling reusable bags. The Hudson Area Library is collecting tote bags and partnering with the Columbia County Department of Social Services to distribute the bag to residents in need. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. Bethany Bump is reporting for the Times Union that Governor Andrew Cuomo said February 20th that he will visit Massachusetts, Illinois, and either California or Colorado to try to see, and I quote, "different versions," end quote, of legalized recreational marijuana programs for state legislators who are expected to vote on the issue this spring. Cuomo said, and I quote, "We want a goal of social equity. We want to make sure young people can get it, etc. We want to make sure that there are advantages to communities that have been oppressed," end quote. The neighboring state of Vermont recently approved recreational marijuana sales, and many New York license plates can be seen in the parking lots of the five Berkshire County pot shops in Massachusetts. Marijuana is now legal in 11 states and Washington, D.C., and two-thirds of Americans support legalization, according to a November 2019 Pew Research Center poll. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman is reporting for the State of Politics blog. As expected, the acting director of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, Matthew Albens, made an appearance February 20th at the Rensselaer County Jail in Troy to denounce the state law permitting undocumented residents to apply for driver's licenses and preventing federal agencies from accessing the motor vehicle database. Albens, flanked by law enforcement and elected officials, including Rensselaer County Sheriff Patrick Russo, the only sheriff in New York to collaborate with ICE, said, and I quote, "I don't know how you compromise on public safety," end quote. The well-publicized event was met by a protest attended by 75 people who chanted outside the building, causing the press conference to be briefly halted. Abby Hoover is reporting from Columbia Green Media. Some local residents participated in that demonstration, including Brian McCormick, director of the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. The Sanctuary Movement is the regional coordinator of the Green Light Campaign, and McCormick estimated the group has assisted more than 400 community members in obtaining driver's licenses since the law went into effect in December 2019.
At the press conference, Albence denied that his department would use the state's motor vehicle database as a way to find undocumented people, but McCormack said there are examples from other states that ICE is abusing access to databases. McCormack said, and I quote, "They are using that to target our immigrant communities, and that's exactly why we wrote the strongest privacy provisions in the nation into the green light legislation," end quote. Melanie Lekasubic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. The Greenville Town Board has announced residents should expect an increase in their sewer bill. Town Supervisor Paul Mako said, and I quote, "It was recommended to us by our bond attorney, Christine Schell, and by the Environmental Facilities Corporation that we look into the possibility of doing a sewer rate increase," end quote. He said the increase would be in the neighborhood of $10 per quarter on the basic sewer bill of $110. Before imposing any increase, the town board will hold information sessions and a public hearing to inform the public and gauge residents' reactions. Mako said it has been some time since residents saw an increase in their sewer bill. Mako noted, and I quote, "I don't think we've had an increase since we expanded the sewer district downtown," end quote. Read the full story in the Greenville Pioneer. Ann Correal is reporting for the New York Times. The Trump administration continues to target New York over passage of its green light law, this time by crippling the overseas export of tens of thousands of motor vehicles. As a result, a busy industry that includes car dealerships, auction companies, exports, freight carriers, and shipping lines has ground to a halt. The restrictions announced this month by the Department of Homeland Security are delaying the export of all vehicles with New York State titles. But Governor Andrew M. Cuomo's office and people in the industry said the car export trade has not simply slowed, it has stopped. Ships have been contained at ports, containers unloaded, and cars put back in storage. The new restrictions came at the same time the federal government started barring New York residents from trusted traveler programs such as Global Entry. Federal officials tied their actions to the state's passage of the Green Light Law, which allows undocumented people to obtain driver's licenses and blocks federal agencies from gaining access to the state's motor vehicle database. And more than a dozen states offer driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants, but only New York has shielded its motor vehicle database from federal immigration enforcement agencies, according to administration officials. A spokesman for U.S. Customs and Border Protection said the agency checks vehicle ID numbers against state DMV records to verify ownership and check for fraud. And I quote, "Because CBP, Customs and Border Protection, will no longer be able to carry out these checks against New York Department of Motor Vehicle Records, the export of the used vehicle titled and registered in New York may be significantly delayed," end quote. A Cuomo administration official responded, saying the agency would check if cars were stolen using a national database that is updated by the New York Department of Motor Vehicles. Read the full story in the New York Times. Tim Blydenburg is reporting for the Times Union. Ruth Piwanka, Kinderhook Village historian, has been named the 2020 recipient of the Martha Washington Woman of History Award. The award is given by Washington's headquarters state historic site every year to a woman who has made a contribution to the history of the Hudson Valley through education, promotion, or preservation. Piwanka holds a seat on the Village of Kinderhook Historic Preservation Commission and at one time served as the municipal historian for the town of Kinderhook. She played a significant role in the restoration of Kinderhook's Persons of Color Cemetery, listed by the National Register of Historic Places. For more than 50 years, Piwanka has been an independent curator and researcher of Dutch heritage and material culture in the Hudson Valley. She is also a published author and mentor to students and colleagues and volunteers, the historic site said. The award presentation will take place at Washington's headquarters state historic site at 2 p.m. on March 22nd. The public is invited and encouraged to attend. Read the full story in the Columbia paper.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Sunday with a high of 47, a low Sunday night around 28. Monday should also be mostly sunny with a high of 49. Then there is a 20% chance of rain Monday night after 1 a.m., mixing with snow after 3 a.m., with cloudy skies at a low around 36. Tuesday, chance of rain in the morning. It could possibly turn to snow in the afternoon. Cloudy skies are the forecast for Tuesday with a high near 42, 50% chance of precipitation. Tuesday night, again, there is a 50% chance of rain before 10 and then turning to snow after 10 p.m. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Sunday, February 23rd, Colleen McCracken, immigrant, ex-con, and domestic abuse survivor, invites us into her sewing shop where we're introduced to Eleanor Roosevelt, Jackie Kennedy, Lady Bird Johnson, and Mary Todd Lincoln in this performance of the First Ladies Coalition. Created and performed by Ginger Grace and directed by Austin Pendleton at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill at 2 p.m. Celtic American roots band Runa performs at Dewey Hall on Main Street in Sheffield, Massachusetts at 3 p.m. Burt Murder play rock music, and so do the Dolphins from Lexington, Kentucky. There should be a live webcast of the entire show at WGXC.org and 90.7 FM beginning around 9 p.m. from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org/calendar. WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC.
518-291-9492.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
Hi, I'm AJ. I go to school at Leibri. I'm 9 years old, and I recently moved from Manhattan to Elizaville. But I technically feel like Hudson's my home because we come here a lot.
It's true, you do. And we're here every week talking about books.
Yay!
Books we love, books we don't love so much, and other bookish things, and sometimes some random topics that come up related to books in some way.
Remember the first day when I came here and we were talking about books and somehow it got related? Oh yeah, because I said the ice cream fact and then everyone started talking about ice
favorite
cream.
Favorite ice cream flavors? It's bookish, somehow. Sure. But yeah, so we're usually here with our friends Amelia and Lena, and they're not here today, sadly, but we're here, so that's happy.
At Yay. Least it's not just one of us, like if I showed up and then you weren't here, you. And then I would have to be like, hello, radio listeners, this is the Bound by Books show, and,
Yeah, I don't like hosting a show by myself. There's plenty of people on WGXC that do that, and I don't know how they do it because I really need someone to talk with. I don't like talking out to the listeners by myself.
It's kind of creepy.
As like, lovely as you all are out there, you don't talk back to me in a way that I can hear you. But feel free to talk with us during the radio show. We'll pretend we can hear you.
Yeah. Hey, what did you say, listeners?
What was that? Huh? Oh, yeah, I totally agree. You're so wise. So have you been reading anything interesting lately, AJ?
Yes, I have. Since February is Black History Month.
Yeah.
I've read a book called Who is Sojourner Truth in the Who Is mm-hmm. series.
That's the series with the drawings with the people have big heads, right?
Yeah.
On the cover.
They're like, why is my head so much bigger than my body? I don't know why.
That'd be really awkward. But they're very popular books. Yeah. Was this your first Who Is book?
No, I've read a lot of others, but I can't remember the names. I just forgot because I read way too many of them.
Yeah. So what did you learn about Sojourner Truth?
Well, she was born a slave. Her name is Belle. And most of her family members got sold off to other slave leaders, kind of. I don't actually know the correct. Slave keepers, mm-hmm. sort of, slave owners. And as she grew up, she learned to work as hard as a man could because she was the one in the family who had to work at the crops. And Sojourner, well, her name wasn't really Sojourner, but I'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. And then she got sold off to many other slave owners, and then eventually she married another slave, and then she had 5 children. I forgot all of the names, sadly. I could have told them to you, but
that's okay.
Anyway, they were nice names. Mm-hmm. And so one day she escaped in the dark of the night with the newborn because the others could take care of their dad and themselves. And then she was a slave again, but then she got rights to be former slave because she was free to do what she wanted. But it was still hard for her because of all of the no blacks here signs mm-hmm. and the colored signs. And so she was in New York City. And then as her daughter grew up, I think that her daughter had to be shipped away, but then her son was shipped away, but it was illegal, and she went to court, and she fought for getting her son back, and she won. And all this time as I was reading, I was like, why does this seem so familiar to me about some person? And then as I thought of that, I kept reading, and it turns out that she got her name Sojourner Truth because she was going to go on a ferry and someone asked her for her name. She thought about this for a while. She didn't want to be called her name that she has been called by her slave owners, Belle. She decided to make up a name, Sojourner Truth, because Sojourner means traveler, and she meant truth because she was going to spread God's word. And the book basically ended there. And with my question on who it was, I was thinking, what if Sojourner was actually one of my ancestors? And this is like very exciting for me because I'm like, what happened? She has no known, well, she changed her name and it was legal to do that, I think. So who knows who her daughters and sons got married and who her brothers and sisters married and who they led to. Maybe I am a descendant of Sojourner Truth. It's very exciting. Maybe I can be like her third great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren four times removed.
Or a cousin. Yeah.
Or maybe
that's
I can
interesting with
like a grand sister.
A grand sister. Is that a thing? A grand sister?
No,
that'd be a cool word. We should figure out.
Sister. Grand it's sister. Like you're so close that you're a sister, but you're actually kind of like a grandchild. So a great, 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 great grand sister.
Yeah. That's like some cultures have, they use terms like cousin brother or cousin sister. And it means like their cousin who's a man or cousin who's a woman. Like they use that to kind of define it.
Cousin brother.
But it also, I feel like sister. Often in families where I've known people that use the term cousin brother or cousin sister, their cousins are closer to being siblings than like how close my cousins and I are. Although I love my cousins. Shout out to my cousins.
Mine too, if they're even listening.
But my cousins aren't like siblings. They're like cousins.
My cousins live, well, my closest cousins, one of them is at school in Buffalo. Shout out. And the other two are living just a couple blocks away from my grandma in Queens. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them too.
It's nice that they're pretty close. I mean, I guess Buffalo's and New York City are far, but they're close enough. But you liked the book?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have any books that you are willing to talk about?
I do. Although one thing I think is really interesting about Sojourner Truth is that she is from relatively close to here.
I think somewhere across, maybe in the border, because yeah. She kept on fleeing from different places. And eventually she got really close to Manhattan, so she fled there.
Yeah, I know at one point, or for a time at least, she lived in Ulster County, which is where like New Paltz is. And the library at SUNY New Paltz is the Sojourner Truth Library. But I think often when we hear stories about slavery, they're talking about the South and how horrible it was in the South. But there was also plenty of slavery up north
as
well.
There was slavery in the North, but the majority of the people up north were against slavery. But there were still some people who owned slaves. So.
Yeah, but she's very inspiring. So an excellent choice for reading in Black History Month.
Mom also kind of half forced me to read it.
Are you glad she half forced
it?
You?
Yeah. To read it.
To read it.
Because we were at a library and I wanted to read a comic book, but Mom was like, no, if you're at the library, you might as well learn something. And so she gave me the book and I was trying to read it, but there was a Valentine's Day event. Not at the Hudson one, but I think Rhinecliff or someplace. And while they were doing the event, I was reading. Yeah, I am kind of glad.
I will say you can sometimes learn things from comics too.
Yeah.
Both from stories, but also there's some nonfiction comics as well.
Like Smile and Guts and Sisters and El Defo. And there are a bunch of biographies on famous people like on Amelia Earhart and
Satchel Paige. There's a new one about astronauts. I think it's about female astronauts.
Yeah,
called astronauts.
I read that one.
Oh, did you? Was it good? Was it interesting?
Astronauts.
I want to read that one. I haven't read it yet. And I really liked, there was one, I can't remember how much it was nonfiction versus like loosely based on reality. I don't know. There's a book called Primates that's about three women who were scientists that went into the field, and they were three prominent women who each focused on different primates, hence why the book is called Primates. And one is Jane Goodall, which many people know her name, and Diane Fossey, and then Berut. I forget her last name. She's the one I knew less well. But one of them worked with chimps, one with mountain gorillas, and one with orangutans.
So what was the one who you forgot their last name was again?
That was the woman that worked with orangutans. Her name's Berut.
So why don't we
something?
Just why don't you we just call her Berut Cowboy Grandpa?
No. We can't just call everybody Cowboy Grandpa, as fun as it is. Let's see. Berut. Okay, so the book was called Primates, The Fearless Science of Jane Goodall, Diane Fossey, and Berut Galdikas. by Jim Ottaviani and Maris Wicks. So it's definitely, I learned a lot about these three people from this book. But actually, the publisher themselves, in this review that they wrote of it, they said, one of the questions that we frequently get asked about this book is it nonfiction? The answer is, it's difficult to tell. Primates is ostensibly a nonfiction biography about three different women who work with primates, Jane Goodall, Diane Fossey, and Brut Gildikas. It tells about their lives and their work, and the author and the illustrator both did a lot of research and endeavored to be as faithful as possible to the historical realities of their subjects. So why is it difficult to tell if it's nonfiction? Graphic novels are one of those things that it's hard to fit in the nonfiction category because everything is so described that it's just about impossible to be 100% accurate. And there you go.
Nice description.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of Jane Goodall, have anyone of our viewers and
listeners? Nobody's viewing us right now. Is there a spy cam in here?
Viewers, listeners, what I mean is anyone out there listening to us talk right now has ever heard of The Far Side. There was this comic that was about two chimps, and there was the mother and there was the father, and the father was being picked at by the mother, and the mother held up a string of hair and said, "Another blonde hair. Have you been hanging out with that Jane Goodall person again?" or something That's, like that.
It's disturbing.
Well, Gary Larson, the author of Far Side, actually met Jane Goodall, so she actually read it a couple of, I think, weeks or months after they met. So that was very interesting for me to know because there was this little section about Jane Goodall in there.
Cool. Well, I do have a book to talk about, and it's a graphic novel. It's not a nonfiction graphic novel, but it was lovely, and I probably learned something from it. Because you learn things from reading fiction, too. Just saying. But it is called Snapdragon. It's by Kat Leigh, and it's about a young woman named Snapdragon. It goes by Snap. And at the start of the book, I'll just read a little bit from it. You can't see the pictures, but Snap is riding their bike down the road. Says, "Our town has a witch. She fed her eye to the devil. She eats roadkill and casts spells with the bones. That's the kind of bull that dumb kids at my school say. Witches ain't real. She's just an old loony. But they also say she eats pets, so I have to be sure." And Snap has a dog collar in her hand, so she's worried about her dog who's gone missing. And so she has an encounter with the witch because she actually finds her dog there, and her dog is missing a leg, and she's worried because there's stories about this witch eating pets. And the witch, in quotes, comes out and says, "Of course, I'm eating him piece by piece," kind of thing. But then Snap yells, like, "I'm not scared of you." And so the other person says, "Yeah, I just found your dog and healed him up." And so then Snap leaves, but then the next day Snap finds a possum that is dead, but that stomach is moving, and she's able to rescue the possum's babies. And because she now knows that this woman is not a witch, but actually helped her dog heal, she brings the possums to the witch, who's again not a witch. She learns later that the witch is actually an old woman named Jax, who has an eye patch. And she brings the possums to Jax and asks Jax to take care of them. And Jax says that she'll take care of the possums if Snap helps her take care of the possums and also helps her with her work. So Snap starts going to see Jax every day and learns that what she actually does with roadkill is that she goes around and gathers the dead animals. And she does this little thing where she puts her hands together in a clap as a way to kind of send their spirits out. And then she buries them until their bodies disintegrate. And then she takes the bones out of their graves and makes them into skeletons that she then sells online as like scientific models. So that's where all these rumors about her being a witch come from, because she actually cares for these deceased animals and like does something with them.
Better to do that than eat them.
Yes, true. Although there's something to be said for eating fresh roadkill if you eat animals. Why not? But anyways,
how can it be fresh roadkill?
If something just gets hit. I've heard of that happening around here where like a deer will get hit by a car. And then if it's just recently been hit, somebody that eats venison, they might as well make use of the meat.
At least they were already injured instead of just like, well, I'm not saying that it's a good thing to shoot deer. I know that I eat hamburgers, but shooting deer. But I know that eating hamburgers is like eating cow ground up, but eating venison, for me, it's like, I just can't stand the idea.
Do you watch too much Bambi?
Well, I actually don't like Bambi that much. Oh. It's just the actual images of deer are cute, but images of cows
are cute too.
Not that much.
I love cows.
For me.
But anyways, I don't think this is an actual spoiler because I think it's in the description. But in addition to this realization that Jack's actually, like, there's reasons behind the myth of her being a witch, it turns out she does have some magical powers. And Snap, kind of along the way, finds out that she maybe has some magical powers too. And so that becomes part of the story, is them figuring out Snap's powers.
Does she?
You have to read it to find out what happens.
Is it in the library?
Oh, yeah. That's where I borrowed it from. It's a really good book. I loved it. I wasn't sure if I was going to love it. I feel like the art was not my favorite art of all times, but the story was really good. And I mean, the art was good. It's just, it wasn't. I feel like there's certain artists where I feel like their artwork is so beautiful that even if the story is not that good, at least I enjoy the art. And I feel like this one was more story driven. The quality of the story was really good. And I liked the characters. There's a lot of side characters that I didn't even mention, but it's a really nice book. Highly suggested. And yes, it's available through the library.
So are the background characters Tom, Dick, Harry?
I don't remember
Jerry,
all of their names.
Larry.
But Snap lives with her mom. And then Snap also has a new best friend that they make along the way, who's very cool and has their own little storyline. And then also Snap's grandmother factors into the story, too. There's some nice things with that.
What section is it in?
What section's the book? Mm-hmm. Like in the library?
Mm-hmm.
It's in the kids' comics section.
Let's hope that mom will even let me look at the book, even because she's not that into comics.
I love comics.
Nothing against mom's idea of not
AJ's being mama. That into comics are great. I love reading comics. I read other books too, but
she's just not into the idea of wasting.
It's not
your
a waste.
Ideas your brain on comics instead of actually learning things.
So she likes nonfiction. It's not about the comics, it's about fiction versus nonfiction, or
she just wants there to be a little bit more information. She's not totally against comics though.
Mm-hmm. Well,
mom,
reading comics also
you.
Helps. No.
Nothing against
your
you.
Mom is wonderful. But one thing that comics do that other books don't do is they help build visual literacy skills. So there's that. Go comics.
Yay.
And one thing I really like about nonfiction comics, too, is that because they're usually not an in-depth look at something, because they have pictures, so the words are more limited. But I think with comics, if they're done really well, nonfiction and others, but nonfiction in particular in this moment, they can be really effective in getting you interested in learning more about a subject. And so then you can go from reading your comic to like doing some research on your own, either looking up other books or looking up articles online to learn more about a subject. So that can be really good. And sometimes the information sticks with you better if there's pictures involved, which I know there's nonfiction books that aren't comics that also have pictures. And I actually love reading those as well. I like a good visual element.
I have another book.
You
to
do?
Share.
What's that?
Well, it's actually a series. It's the 39 Clues.
Oh,
and
yeah?
It's,
I've never read those.
I keep going back to that section to reread this book, but mom's like, you already have a book out. You can't check it out.
Oh.
And I'm like, but I keep forgetting to check out the book. So sad. So anyway, it's a series, and the series, The 39 Clues, there are three big characters, Amy, Dan, and they're all pair. Like pairs of pairs.
Pairs of pairs?
They're all pair.
What?
They're babysitter.
Oh, they're au pair. I thought you said they're all pairs. And I was like, pairs of what? So it's about the three kids and their au pair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Off air, off air.
Okay. I might be saying it wrong. I was definitely hearing it wrong. But anyways, go on.
And Amy's and Dan's grandmother, Grace, died. And when all of her relatives went to this funeral, they went into this kind of like secret room where it says, take $1 million and walk away, or go find 39 clues to get a prize greater than man has ever seen or thought of, or something like that. I forgot. That was all in the first book. And of course they just take the 39 clues. Although the $1 million could have really helped their financial stuff and stuff like that.
Sure.
Because they weren't exactly living in the most luxurious place on earth. But anyway, they start traveling the world, And what I really like about this is how there's always a lot of suspense in the books about what's going to happen next. And I like Dan a lot because he's always so enthusiastic about things, and he's also a big eater like I am. And he's excited whenever they, because from unknown relatives, they always get sent these things like Visa cards and gold cards and cards like that. And they're really independent. But I also like Amy because Amy is more practical and she likes reading a lot of books. Mm-hmm. And, well, this is technically a sub of the characters, mm-hmm. but Nelly is the au pair, which just makes me giggle when I think of her being a pair.
I was thinking a pair like two. Like a pair of socks.
The au pair. She was, I'm just going to stick with babysitter now.
Okay.
She is also kind of into food, but she's more like relaxed and she's into her phone a lot. But she's really getting into the search for the clues. Plus, they're technically getting a trip around the world that you don't need to plan for. You get to go somewhere that is completely unexpected. Hmm. And they have a cat named Saladin, who is a cat, and he really likes...
Shocker.
And he really likes red snapper fish, and Dan is obsessed with Saladin. So when he looked, and he's like, because I read books 1-7, and in the 7th book, they're in Egypt, and when they were learning that they were going to Egypt, Dan was like, oh no! Because, and then he said, there's no red snapper in Egypt, so Saladin's going to kill me! Mm-hmm. Which I thought was really funny. Yeah. And then there are all these secondary characters. For example, the Eisenhower family. And the Hope family. Well, I think of Eisenhower because that's the dad's name. And he's the most popular Holt. Like, they're more like jocks. Like, huge, burly people. Even the women are huge and burly. And they're hysterical because they're, like, running around trying to chase after Amy and Dan. But then they think that they messed something up. And just the way that they interact with the other characters, all of them. The way that all the characters interact with one another, it's just so hysterical. And there's this other really important character that I think I should bring up. His name is Alistair O. And he keeps on disappearing and reappearing. It's like nothing can ever kill him. He's been in a fire, he's been in an earthquake, he's been in a crumpled down building, and he just barely escaped. The twins were there too, but they were under worse conditions than he was. Mm-hmm. It was like he barely even had one scrape on him.
Magic man.
And I'm almost done with the 7th book, and I'm really interested. Oh, cool.
I was about to ask how many you've read. Do you read them all in order?
Well, I skipped a couple, but yeah.
There's also a bunch of like other, yes. 39 clues, and there's 39 clues, double cross, or something like that.
Yes, I'm not going to read those until I actually finish, because I think there are 11 books, but shouldn't there be 39 books because there are 39 clues?
Mm, that would make sense.
I think the extra books are actually where you get more of the clues, so I'm going to read those afterwards. Cool. Although they do seem to be in order with the other books, so maybe I should have read those before reading the other books. But I actually didn't even know those existed until I went to the library.
Yeah, one thing I like about the series is that they're written by all different authors, and they're all like really good, like sort of acclaimed authors.
It seems like they're just the same one. They're all so similar.
Like the writing all sounds the same?
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to remember who they're all written by. Like Peter Larangis, who actually comes to the book festival. So you could meet him this year if you go to the book festival.
Hooray!
Linda Sue Park, Rick Riordan, Margaret Peterson Haddix, Gordon Corman, Jude Watson, Jeff Hirsch, who also has come to the book festival a number of times. I don't know if he's coming this year. Roland Smith, Natalie Standifer, like these are all names that I know well. Like we have other books by them in the library. But they all read well together. Like they all have a similar style, even though they're written by different people.
Yeah, it all seems like they're all the same book, but it's one huge book, but just split in different parts. So that it's like, I think that they wrote it out as one huge book, but then they split it in order and came up with names for them.
Hmm. Well, if you're looking for those books at the library, we have them all together. We thought that was better than separating them by author, because you want to read the series. You're going to try to find them all together. So look for 39 clues.
They're on the second shelf behind the huge Wimpy
Kid. Yeah, by the Wimpy Kid.
I'm so wimpy.
But anyways, we're just about out of time for today.
No!
But we'll be back next Monday to talk about some more books.
Let's hope that we're not alone this time.
I bet we'll have some friends next week. But at the very least, we'll have each other.
Yay!
Hope everyone has a good week with lots of quality reading time.
See you.
Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
The Pentagon is being sued for quietly contracting to burn millions of gallons of foam containing toxic chemicals at incinerators around the country, including here in New York. The unused firefighting foam contains PFAS, a class of chemicals now so persistent in the environment they're called forever chemicals. PFAS, which has been found in the drinking water in Hoosick Falls and Newburgh, New York, has been linked to a number of serious health conditions, including cancer. According to Jonathan Kalmus Katz, a staff attorney at the environmental law firm Earth Justice, the incineration has already begun.
This was shipped to the Norlite kiln in Cohoes, but there was no public announcement, no local awareness, and even DEC and EPA were kept in the dark.
The lawsuit charges that the incineration violates the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and the National Defense Authorization Act. Kalmus Katz notes that NEPA requires federal agencies to examine the environmental consequences of their actions before approving them, as well as public disclosure of any environmental or health impacts.
Here there was no NEPA review. DOD rushed into these contracts without looking at the impacts on the surrounding communities and really put large amounts of people at risk without ever considering the chemicals they were going to be exposed to.
He adds that the National Defense Authorization Act contains a specific provision regulating the incineration of PFAS. Facing lawsuits and potentially billions in liability for releases of PFAS in firefighting foams used at bases around the country, the DOD chose to incinerate its unused stock, but as Kalmus Katz points out, PFAS was used in foam precisely because it doesn't burn.
When you send that foam to the incinerator, you not only end up with the risk of PFAS coming out the stack, but also hazardous chemicals that are produced by incomplete combustion. So it poses a serious threat to the surrounding communities.
The lawsuit asks the court to annul the contracts for incinerating PFAS and to require the DOD to conduct the environmental studies it should have done before burning the chemicals. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Which brings me to this appropriate moment to discuss an ongoing effort here at WGXC. You know, what we want to do is eventually have monthly dedicated support of $5,000 made up of many sustaining supporters who make contributions which at this point average around $14 a month. If we could get to that $5,000 a month number, we would have very few pledge drives in the future. And pledge drives, well, I don't mind them that much, but they can be a little dispiriting. And, you know, in some of the early days, we were downright desperate as we fought to stay alive as a radio station. Well, we're near number 9, so I think we're here for good. But it doesn't happen on its own. It needs your constant support. You can't just say, oh, hey, I helped it in those early years. I gave some money back then. Yeah, you did probably, but it doesn't work like that. You got to continue. You got to become what we call a sustaining supporter. How do you do that? Well, it's pretty easy. You go to WGXC.org, hit the donate button, excuse me, and it'll set you up to make your monthly contribution. It's easy. Comes out of your credit card. You barely know it's there, unless, of course, you have a little money left on your credit card, which happens. But, you know, they'll check in with you, make sure you still want to do it. And then you don't have to worry. During a pledge drive, you can say to yourself, ha, I've already given to WGXC. Ha! They're not talking to me in this pledge drive. They're talking to all those other freeloaders who haven't given any money recently. And that's the nature of the game. You can be an ardent listener and still be a freeloader, which is, you know, that's up to you and your own moral compass. But really, if you're listening to this show, if you're listening to any show on the station, you should feel at least a slight impulse to contribute in some fashion to this station. And, you know, there's no telling who you'll hear next over the airwaves here at WGXC. We're constantly adding new shows. We're constantly soliciting people to create new shows, to fill in the daily slots of the morning show and the afternoon show. This is one of the slots of the afternoon show. There are a couple up for grabs right now since people are moving on and all kinds of things happen. Everybody gets a chance here. I mean, it's not hard to get on the air here. The rules aren't too difficult. The skills are pretty simple. And the next thing you know, you can have a show.
I think I'm going to do now, if Randall, are you ready?
I am.
Okay. Then I'm going to turn it over to Randall Martin, who's going to share some very important information with you. Randall?
Thank you. Thank you. It seems like just yesterday that we were here on the radio.
It was just yesterday.
So a bit of deja vu, and it was great that we were speaking about consciousness and together in Hudson and diversity and all the other sort of cultural issues that we were able to touch on just a bit yesterday. And, you know, the thing I really like about Hudson is that there's a great level of social consciousness and engagement. And the community seems very willing to learn and engage. And in our conversation yesterday, there's a bunch of events locally that I'm involved in with many others that are really great in terms of building community, building a cultural understanding of each other and a greater, deeper sort of relationship building. And one of those things was the community dinner that I mentioned yesterday, and that's going to be April 18th, and it's at 601 Union. It's been going on for many, many years, And it continues, and it's a great time to bring a covered dish and learn to speak with your neighbors and get to know your neighbors and your community, especially people in people groups that you may not have never been in contact with. And it's really a great opportunity to sort of build your sort of cultural diversity library, your mental library in your mind of who's who and just really experience not only great food, and you're encouraged to bring a covered dish,
right,
but also to, again, meet your neighbors and really be part of the community in its totality that just maybe goes beyond your own block. And this being Black History Month, this, again, Hudson, shout out to Hudson, really for trying to bring the kind of social consciousness engagement that is needed throughout the world. And one of the things I had mentioned yesterday is there is a couple things, but there is a famous artist that has come into town, and his name is Michael D'Antonio. D'Antonio, I'm pronouncing that correctly. And he is called the Norman Rockwell of the Resistance. And he's doing a great opening and exhibition down at the Hudson Underground. And it includes his world-renowned art on racism, the resistance, corporatism, and the environment. And it's really not to be missed. It's going to be April 4th. And if you love great art and political commentary within the art, you'll love this. And part of the sub-theme of what he does is working through the intersection of where art can create change. And that's so it's very exciting. I know him personally, and he's a great guy. And Thursday, he's also, in his particular neighborhood, he's also great friends with Ron English, who is another world-renowned artist. And not only is he a painter, but he is also from the band The Rabbits. And that's another world-renowned band that's actually been coming to Club Helsinki on the 2nd. Mm-hmm. So, again, a lot, and they talk about social issues. It's, you know, a lot of their songs involve social commentary, social satire. And so, you know, it's a great way to start April in sort of enveloping yourself in really social consciousness and understanding what's going on around you. And last but not least, on March 13th, which is an event that we're doing at Club Helsinki, which is a local talent night. And it features three local/regional bands, up-and-coming artists that are going to be coming here. And what we're trying to do in this series, the On the Verge series, is to recognize these young local artists that are making that next leap in their musical careers. They're incredibly talented, and you know, and they have great lyrics. Many of them come with a great variety of original songs, which are really great, and they performed, you know, at some level in various places. And one, the artist Colton the Maker, is going to be there. He just released a new album, Young Man, right from our own neighborhood, our own backyard. A great local artist. I've known him for years, since Operation Unite days, when he was young and coming to participate in their program. And he's just worked his way up, and just his musical talent has just blossomed. He's going to be there. Brad Burke, who was a Catskill resident. I was going to say native, but I'm not sure he's a Catskill native. He may be. But great, prolific lyrics, great singer-songwriter. And then Donasia, a lady that I've played with in up in Albany, is going to be here, and she's going to share some. We're going to do a great dance music set. So if you love to dance and have a great time, this is the night for you. And it's very and we've made it very economical. It's only $10.
Lots of good stuff.
Boy. Yeah.
Boy. Wow.
So, I know there's a lot to cover, but there's a lot of great things happening in Hudson, and I preface it with saying, you know, this is one of the great reasons about living in Hudson, that you get a chance to engage with the community and all these worthwhile events, and you're just surrounded by socially conscious people that are motivated to do good things.
Now, I don't know if I caught you, but did you mention what the admission was for these events? Are they
I think the gallery, putting me on the spot, the gallery is, I think that's a free event at the Hudson Underground. Mm-hmm. And again, you got to see that. I seen his art, and it just blew me away. And if you know the commentator of Malcolm Nance, he is a MSNBC guy. He's always on WAMC. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be there. He's, you know, he loves of the art. He's going to speak about it. And so him and the artists are going to be there. That's a great event. I believe that's a free event. It is a free event, from what I understand. The Rabbits, you have to go to the Club Helsinki website and find out about that. That show is going to be, like I said, on the 2nd. And, again, a great band. And just great art. And it's just, you know, these guys are wonderful. And the way that they make you enjoy music, but also think. The community dinner, that's a covered dish. Take a look at that. If you want more information about that, look at the community board. For all our homegrown folks, they'll find all the information about that on the community board. I know you're bringing a covered dish is encouraged with enough to feed people because we sit at tables. As you know, you've participated.
Yeah, I'll try to remember to share this info again as I do my program. Well, it's going to be, what's the date again?
That one is April 18th.
April. So I got a month or so to repeat the event on radio for you folks.
Yep. And the, what did I say? Did I say the 13th, Friday the 13th? Hmm. Normally considered a bad luck day, but